Coming to you by way of the not-for-profit Mainframe Studios at 900 Keough Way in downtown Des Moines, this is 900 Views, a podcast about building community through the arts as we build an arts community. I'm your host, Pat Bodie, and today I'm on the roof of Reed's Hollow in Beaverdale with LA-based sculptor Nate Page. Now, Nate is here at the behest of Group Creative Services and Polk County Soil and Water Conservation District. He's being supported by the Iowa DNR and EPA, and he's here to help us understand and watershed. And he's done it with a piece called Holes. So before we get into a little bit more about LA life, can you tell us what Holes is and kind of how it's supposed to work?
Yeah, I can try. They're two quite large sculptures, basically like small room size sculptures. And they're a raincoat and an umbrella. And there's holes in them.
Lots of
like kind of big drilled holes with a big cartoon drill or something. You can't really tell what made the holes, but they're big. Maybe you could stick your arm through it or your head through it. But yeah, there's a bunch of holes in these two items that are supposed to keep you dry.
And what was your rationale for that being the theme you kind of wanted to go with?
I thought it was a metaphor for to start to think about porosity of surfaces and rain.
Okay, all right. And so it's supposed to be, if I understand correctly, a bit of an attention getter that Polk County Soil and Water Conservation District can use around town to help people understand, ultimately, that there's monies available to them to apply compost on their land, to build rain gardens, this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It should be a pretty big eye-opener. But you did this back in L.A., drove it in town today, and you've never really been to Des Moines before.
Correct.
So how did you know this would be kind of the approach to take?
Well, there's a way that I like to work that is, it's very spatial and experiential, but also representational. So in a way, kind of iconic representations that generally we all kind of share a common understanding about, which is a raincoat, which is an umbrella. So these kind of like symbols, in a way, I felt like could work, and then just thinking about them as sculpturally in terms of scale and the treatment of holes in them, I feel like could be very adaptable. And part of it is like the transparency visually also communicates the porosity, so having the holes and being able to see through the pieces into the background, which maybe is a paved over surface that is not porous, or maybe it is actually like trees and a green grass or something that is like nature, so that the context can visually become part of the understanding of the work no matter where it's put.
And this is intended really to kind of go around the greater Des Moines metro area at festivals and events and catch people's eye, and then folks from Polk County Soil and Water Conservation District are going to visit with you about the options that you have. So based on what I've seen so far, it looks like it's going to be pretty successful, and there's a sign version that goes with this. So it kind of creates a community of folks within this community who are paying attention to what's happening with our watersheds. This is not the only kind of project of this ilk that you've done. You did a really fascinating project to me with kind of tract housing and people within those homes and dancers. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the rationale you use when you ultimately try and create something that's pretty inventive and yet it's got this community building flavor to it?
Right. Yeah, the project is California Living Project, and it's based on Joseph Eichler, who is a mid-century modern tract home developer. Some people think he's an architect, but he's not. But he had these homes that were very, like, of the time, like indoor-outdoor living, very open to nature, with sheer glass walls on them. So you'd always see images and modernist magazines about you know, the living room is opened up to the backyard and nature, and it's like this seamless sort of airy, beautiful experience between indoor and outdoor. But when you actually go to look at these homes in the subdivision, all those windows and that openness and airiness is only on the back of the house. The front of the homes have no windows. There, it's just like brick walls, like throughout the entire subdivision. And it felt like such a interesting like paradox, you know, between these ideas of connectivity and openness with each other and then also nature. But then there's also this paradox of like there's actually a lot of isolation that can happen even with the best intentions. So I was really interested in that. So I used video to videotape from the backs of the homes into the houses and then projected the interiors of the homes on the fronts of the homes because they're essentially like projection screens.
Oh, wow. Since they had no windows.
Since they had no windows. Right, exactly. And projected them in homes all around the neighborhood. And then for one night, like neighbors would walk around and see each other performing or not in the videos projected on each other's homes. And it created this really unique kind of specific festival like experience.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you've done, like I said, you've been doing these things. And I've got to mention one more, and then we'll get a little bit more philosophical about arts and community building. And that is when I saw the couch bleachers, which the title pretty much describes it. It's a set of bleachers made out of couches.
Yeah.
I can't explain why, and I'm hoping maybe you can help me understand. That just screamed community to me somehow.
Right.
Was that in your head when you did it? That this was going to be a way for people to connect, to chit-chat, or was it just about being comfortable? But it just felt so community-oriented and very powerful visually, oddly enough.
All right, I have to think about that. Like when I first thought of it, it's interesting. I think I'm jumping philosophically really fast.
That's okay.
I think a lot of the work comes from a place of like really like a deep sort of personal like experience or reflection sort of like a singular me as a singular something. And then it always wants to connect back out somehow. And I think that's usually how the work kind of comes to be, is like I am feeling like this really specific weird thing inside of me. How can I connect back out into the world as this thing, right? So yeah, in a way, like I don't necessarily think about specifically building communities, but I do think about like these hidden parts of the individual connecting outside of themselves with others,
which is translating into some direct community building.
Sure. Yeah.
So you started out as sort of an observational artist.
Yeah.
And have translated into more of a public artist, a civic-minded artist. I heard you mention that your parents were civil servants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is this fitting you in the final analysis, this transition from observational artist to someone who's really ultimately about building community?
I think so, because I always felt there's something lacking with the observational work. And I feel like connecting into real experiences, real spaces, real people in the everyday was like I wasn't just happy with a gallery's role in connecting to the everyday, you know, like having a drawing or a painting in a gallery. That seemed very unsatisfying to me. And so I moved into the everyday, and I still feel like I have some of the best parts of the observational work, which is, you know, creating things to look like something else. So a lot of what I do, there's aspects of that that have to happen. Like this needs to fit in with this, or I need to make this look like a raincoat somehow, you know. So I get to still work with a lot of those similar skills of I have a vision of what I want something to look like or line up with, make it look like it seamlessly fits in with this context. You know, so there's an illusion still of creating reality in a lot of what I do, but it's towards another purpose in terms of activating reality rather than being its own sort of escape from reality.
Let's just touch on a couple more things, and then I got to let you go because I know I pulled you away from an open house that's really for you or a reception that's for you. And that is just if you could speak a little bit to the idea of what it's like to live as an artist and try to make a living. You know, we talk about this all the time here. It's really hard to build an arts community when you've got people having to do two or three jobs to be able to support their art. How's that working out for you in L.A.? It sounds like it would be even harder there than here, but maybe it's the opposite.
I think it's hard. Probably everywhere. I think it gets a little trickier. The cost of living, I think, has a big effect, like where you are, how much you need to come up with, what your bottom line is in order to keep working, you know, to have enough time to work. So I think it's important to be able to balance those things. I also think it's important to learn how to be more efficient with yourself and your ideas, you know? So I think it's possible somehow. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. Is your traveling basically the country and beyond, making connections and networks and meeting other artists and people that are supporting artists, is that arts community unfolding for you in a way that is supportive of you, in a way that you feel like will stand the test of time? Or is this kind of a constant, you know, gotta grind this out all the time and I don't know where the next thing's coming from sort of thing?
That's a good question. And I think it's something I think about a lot, like the personal versus like a group of other people, if you're isolated or if you're connected. And like as me as a personal artist, I think I can be disconnected too often. And so I think it's important for me to keep working to connect and find community somehow, even though I don't know if I know how to build a community, and maybe I try to do that through my work somehow. So to connect, I like my work to connect with other people who maybe feel isolated, but they can become a part of something bigger and still be okay with being isolated, but they're still connected somehow. I don't know. So, but I do think that community is so much more important than being isolated.
What advice do you have for those of us who are working to build our community in a way that allows the arts to thrive?
Man, so hard because artists are so different. I think I've always had a dream of art audiences being more diverse. And sort of like artists finding their pack of audience members. Because I do feel like sometimes, it's natural, but sometimes artists kind of steer themselves towards being accepted by audiences. And I feel like their work could be still more genuinely them and genuinely their own community. And maybe both of them don't know it, what that is yet. So I guess what I'm saying is that the artist is maybe always collaborating with its community to find out who the artist is and what the art is between the artist and the community.
That's great. Thank you very much. Nate, I really appreciated you being here. And as an old conservationist who's been working on watersheds for a really long, long time, I'm excited to see what might happen in this community on both the art side and the conservation side with your project, Holes. Thank you very much. And thanks to Tiva Dawson and Group Creative Services for making this interview possible. Thank you. Really want to thank Nate Page for taking the time to do that interview. He actually interrupted, as you could perhaps tell, a reception for himself. that was occurring at the rooftop of Reed's Hollow. So very kind of him to interrupt those festivities to take the time for the interview. And I want to mention that on August 24th, Mainframe will be hosting Yellow Door Gallery. You might remember that Emily Suzanne Kessinger and her husband Mason Kessinger have co-founded Yellow Door Gallery. It usually hosts salons, and they will have a salon at Mainframe on the 24th. The author of I Was There, American Dream, Malaka Gharib, she's also with NPR, will be there. That's a book about being a first-generation Filipina-Egyptian-American. The music of Colorado-based folk pop-influenced Emma Kieran will take place. Wisconsin comedian Joan La Rosa Doyle will be there. Visual artist Mainframe's own Lee Running will have her work exhibited at this, and Lee will be, if there are no technical snafus, our next guest on this podcast. And we will also have commentary by our own Siobhan Spain of Mainframe Studios as part of that salon. So I wanted to mention that in some detail so people would make an effort to get there. It's going to be an outstanding evening. And with that, I also want to thank my collaborator, Alex Cooney. This wouldn't happen without him. Thank you for joining us for another edition of 900 Views.